Welcome to the Round 12 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name is Marcus, and this week we're back again with FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. Live from Australia this week, I see.
Yes, I'm back home and came home to some pretty chilly weather, mate. So I'm not exactly enjoying myself at the moment. Jet lag sort of kicking my butt a little bit. But no, it's good to be home and it's good to be able to change my teams live, not have to wake up at absurd hours to do that and to watch a bit more footy, which will be great. How did your team go this weekend, mate?
Yeah, I guess good. The first week of the buys sort of shook me around a little bit, but this week I scored 1863 and moved up 3,000 spots to 2007. Look, I guess that's where I sort of wanted to be about now. I just had to go a strange way to get there. I was looking for quite a big score, and then Tom McDonald's 36 on Sunday really didn't help. Yeah, really weird round. Like Rance 44, Tom McDonald 36, Lewis 57, Tarrant 37, just a whole bunch of low scores through my team, but then somehow got on the right end of some as well. So I had Cripps, Mitch Wallace, Boomer Harvey, Goldstein as captain, Dustin Martin, Nick Nat. So I guess that's why I scored pretty well. How'd you go, man?
Not too bad considering I had 17 playing yen, which is painful. I was scheduled to have a few more playing, but aim on out. I had to make 3 trades again to get 17 on Park. So all things considered, 18-28 isn't terrible. I brought in Jacobs this week. Could have brought in Martin, but I thought I'll go with the guy who's able to get on Park pretty consistently, and Jacobs fits that bill. So he's come in. Pretty happy with Steele a week early. I was saying last week, if Steele got in, he's my out for Clark, who was missing again and causing another donut. So Steele came in with an 84. Pretty happy with that. He's out with a bye this week.
He looked awesome in his first game. You just mentioned Clark. Pretty annoyed with Geelong, mate. They've now listed him as another couple of weeks with his calf. That had just said 5 or 6 weeks to begin with, it would have made things a lot easier.
Definitely pretty annoying. And when we had Cracker come back on the weekend, re-elevated into the senior list, and he's a mid forward, and a lot of people held on to Clark and ditched Cracker like I did. So yes, it certainly would have been good to have that information earlier, but do what we can. And then I pulled the lever to Hamling trade again, another one I didn't want to have to do this buy period, but cashed him in for less and picked up Hamling on the bubble and 51 first up. With that, my team actually rose to 7K, which is pretty damn surprising for me. I wasn't expecting that. I was ranked somewhere around 10K last week, so to keep moving up was nice. And hopefully this round, I'm primed for some big scores. I've got 17 premiums and Oxley and Cripps, probably. So who knows, but hopefully tracking for a big round 13 and can finish off on a high mark. It's not been a fun buy period at all.
Yeah, it sounds like you're tracking better for me this week. I've got 17 before trades and not all premiums, so looks like you'll be crushing me. Might even catch up.
Not going to count my eggs before they hatch. In terms of leagues, Mark, we are so, so pleased because after round 12 came out of lockout, 6 of the top 8 leagues. How crazy is that?
That's pretty crazy, man.
First, second, fourth, fifth, seventh, and eighth. A big shout out to the Supercoach Coach Aces. That moved in 10 spots in round 12, so some big movements there down into seventh, which is awesome. The other big mover for the week was Supercoach Coach number 3. That moved in 15 spots out from 39th into 24th. So huge, huge moves from those two leagues. Well done to everyone in the community.
I guess it's because we've been telling people, plan for your buyers, plan for your buyers. And if you didn't plan for buyers, this was the week that you were going to cop a big whack.
Alrighty then, to our group update for the week. Our top scorer for this week was Porker FC with 2,001 points. So well done to you, mate. To be stacked in round 12 is a big deal. So he's moved up to 461st, Chris. So congratulations to you. And an update for the guys in the top 100 in our Supercoach Coach group. Travis D scored 1753 down to 4th. Nate's Nags, 1888. It's gone up to 22, your mate, mate.
Yeah, I think he's learned a lot from the show over the years and seems to be running pretty good. And his team actually seems pretty well set up at the moment. I think it was interesting to see during the week that the number one ranked team traded out the likes of Fife and Pilbury for a lead.
Yes, and we did get a question about that, Mark. People wanting to hear our opinions. I know around social media and fantasy footy circles, that's certainly been a big topic for discussion.
I mean, Fife and Pendles are potentially the two top scorers for the year, so you might struggle if you don't be bringing them back in because they do stand out compared to the other premium mids.
definitely a very risky strategy. I don't want to say too much because he's out at first, so beats me this comment from 7,000th.
You got to think that he's going to be running out of trades very quickly doing stuff like that.
Would have thought he's got lots of trades doing that, but who knows? We've seen people burn out of trades with something like 8 weeks to go and still take out the title, so I guess anything can happen.
Very, very risky strategy, but he is now 350 points in front. So I should also mention Kefa up to number 9th in Real Dream Team this week, making it to the top 10 Supercoach Coach podcast earlier in the year.
And our last shout out to Tim with his team Durek, up to 56th with his score of 1885. So well done to everyone in the community. As per usual, another great round of scores, and hopefully round 13 is supposed to be the easiest one, I think. This week, it's all about finishing our team. So the final upgrades, we've talked about backline and the rocks last week. So this week, we'll have a bit more of a focus toward the midfield and the forwards. So it's all about those final upgrades and maybe a couple of downgrade options for those people still looking to free up a little bit of cash. Don't forget, you can ask us questions on social media every Tuesday at Supercoach Coach and on facebook.com/supercoachcoach. That's how we form our show each week. So thank you guys for your response as per usual. Mark, this week we're going to start off with a question that's quite Essendon flavoured, so I'll palm this off to you. It's from Anthony Griffiths on Facebook. Which Bombers rookie has the best job security, Kavanagh, Edwards or Fantasia? So seems with you guys struggling a little bit, there's a bit more opportunity for these young blokes and you're fresh off the bye, so be keen to hear your thoughts. I'm hoping you're still talking up Kavanagh because you convinced me to take him, so I hope he's still in the team.
I don't think that I convinced you to take Kavanagh. I think I convinced you not to take Boston, because I've always been pretty uncertain on Kavanagh. I ended up taking him myself, but I feel like in all the advice that I gave to anyone, it was pretty restrained in the fact that I hope he can cement himself a spot. But we do have some players coming back from injury, Zaharakis, Hocking, Wendelick and Myers in a few weeks that are sort of competing potentially for a spot with him. So I'm not 100% convinced on his job security. I think that really what is happening is hopefully he'll be given a chance to secure his spot in the team. And if he's ever going to become a player for the Bombers, he's 22, he's had 4 years in the system, and we're probably going to have to give him a run of 10 games and just see what he can do. Like, I think last year when he got a game, he'd come in as the sub or only come in for one game and then be out for another couple and really suffered from confidence, and you could see that on the ground. So I think that hopefully they gave him a shot, but there are a few other players competing for spots with him, including other players in the reserves like Alex Brown and Nick O'Brien would probably like to see some airtime at some stage. Fantasia looks pretty good. He's a bit more expensive though, and probably a very strong chance of being the sub. I don't think he's overly fantasy relevant. The one for me this week though is Edwards. Backline player, he's only played one game, but Travis Collier has a navicular injury and will be out for the rest of the year. So Edwards as a fast-moving half-forward flanker, you'd think that he'd be given a really good chance to fill that role that Collier has vacated for the rest of the year. So Edwards kicked 2 goals in his first game, looked really good, and yeah, he's the pick of the bunch. The other one probably to look out for is Sean McKernan. If he's upgraded from the rookie list this week, he'll come in for his second game of the year. $255,000 ruck forward. Been in great form in the VFL, and I think he'll be given a chance to cement his spot as number one ruck.
Dom Dunn's asking whether or not anyone would consider going early on Jack Steele this week. Obviously on the bye, but with that mid-forward role, a lot of people looking to him to complete some sort of flexibility in their bench positions. What are your thoughts on bringing in a non-playing player, Mark?
If it's like a round 13 to a round 13 player and he looks like the best option going forward, especially with his flexibility, then I don't think it's such a bad idea. I mean, we both bought him in last week completely unsighted, so he struggled a little bit in that first quarter but got going in the second half and really looked good, and I think that he's been guaranteed a spot for the next game from what I read.
Agree with your sentiments there. Is there anybody else in the rookies that you actually like from the weekend, Mark? Neil Bullen has played 2 games now, scored 65 playing a full game this week.
Yeah, he did stand out in that Melbourne game, and he had come off really good form in the VFL. I think he's kicked 3 goals from what I remember watching the game. So 65 isn't a huge return from 3 goals. And he does have the bye this weekend as well, so I think that I definitely have Steele ahead of him.
Toby McLean, if he gets another game, is on the bubble as well. He's played round 10, and then round 11 was the bye, and then round 12. So if he plays, this would be his third consecutive game.
He is a forward, and I was very, very impressed from what I saw from him against the Lions. I think the only concern that I have is that the Lions were pretty woeful in that second half, and McLean looked really good in the second half, so they're not going to come up against opponents like that every weekend. But I mean, he's still pretty skinny and pretty small, but he definitely looked pretty good in that game.
Anyway, we'll move out of the rookies now. It does seem pretty bare, but hopefully not many of you need rookie options this week. And if you do, you might not even need a playing player this week. Most people are comfortably putting 18 on Park, so you can go early on a player like Jack Steele potentially as well. So on to the actual upgrades, Mark. Like I said earlier on in the show, that is our focus this week. To the midfields, and got a lot of questions, mostly about underperforming premiums, which is a bit of a disappointment. But we'll start off with Bradley Wilson's question about Joel Selwood.
It was pretty dire. 14 at halftime.
14 at halftime. So he was doing absolutely terrible. Scraped together 74, including a pretty great goal in the last quarter, but really cobbled that score together. A lot of people are actually thinking about trading him out.
The fact that I think he's gone down in value 10 weeks in a row in Supercoach, which is just crazy. I think if you've got him, you probably have to just hope that a week off does the world of good for him and he comes home strong, because he's quite capable of that. But then you have mentioned a few structural issues with Geelong's team that might mean his overall ceiling is capped a little bit. So, like, what would you think about a sneaky sold to slant trade?
Yeah, I think if you had trades to spare, Mark, certainly I'd think that's a decent option. Sloan obviously bottomed out this week, hitting his break even exactly last week. If you have the trades to be aggressive about it, I would probably pull the trigger on it. But it's not really something that you need to do, I don't think. If you've still got upgrades to do, if your team's still not finished, I would focus on those things first. Having said that, Mark, there are a lot of teams that are pretty much finishing up this week, and some people are considering not trading. Oxley's obviously still got a low break even. Cripps just scored 136. Wallace has been doing well. So there have been cheap players that are doing well enough for some people to consider not trading. And for those players, I'd say if you don't believe Selwood will turn it around, it's more than a legitimate option. Personally, I think it's blasphemous to trade him out, so I'm not going to do it, obviously, Mark.
But would you advise anyone to trade him in?
Definitely not. And I've said this for a while now. I've said his value is obvious, but at the same time, as you well know, Mark, when you've asked me personally, I've said probably would trade somebody else in until he shows a bit of turn of form. So absolutely would not trade him in, especially he's got the bye this week. So his break even is 129, which he's only hit once so far this season, which is crazy from Joel Selwood, but clearly something's not right. He's certainly capable of more, Joel. If you have the trades, feel free to deal with it. Jordan Lewis is another underperforming premium, Mark. 485,000. He's almost more pressing. Painful. His break-even's 170. He's missed three games for owners so far. So he's just turned out to be a very painful pick. Is there any merit to trading him out? Because his price is going to crash even further.
I mean, he did have a big run in the second half of last year. He seems quite capable of putting up the big scores. But after round three, it seemed like he was a brilliant pick. And now it's just turned out absolutely terribly, and very much regretting that one. I don't think that I can really justify trading him out. I think maybe if he was a round 13 buy player, then this would be the opportune time to do that. But because he's round 11, I just don't see it happening really. I'm just going to have to sit him there and hope he comes good.
So what's actually behind these scores, mate? Any idea?
His disposal is pretty woeful. He grabbed the ball about 55 out in the first quarter against Port. It was the only kick I think he had for the quarter, and thought that he could kick it from 55 instead of trying to pass it off or put it up the top of the square, and tried to boot it and kick it straight out on the full. And that's something that happens pretty regular with Jordan in the last couple of months. So if he's not sitting on the sidelines watching the Hawks, he's out there booting the ball straight out of bounds. Yeah, it's pretty disappointing. I don't think he's injured. He had a bit of a shoulder injury, but he seems all right. And I have no idea. Maybe he seems to be in plenty of center clearances and the ball's just not falling his way.
Well, hopefully that's one that should turn around. There's nothing structurally to suggest that his ceiling is capped or anything like that. And certainly they still need guys to step up, because I've been enjoying Hodge getting some of those midfield points. So hopefully Lewis returns to some sort of form. I agree with you in the sense that because he doesn't have the bye, it feels hard to trade him out. I'm of the school of thought that if you assess Jordan like you did Selwood and you thought maybe he's going to average 10 points below a top 8 mid, then you could consider side-swapping this week, even though he doesn't have the bye. But again, you want to be flush with trades in order to be considering all these sorts of things. I think overall, Mark and I would tend toward the conservative and hold both of them. All right, on to JM Hawkins' question from Twitter. JPK looks like great value this week. We both have JPK. And the pain continues, mate. It continues.
Why are you doing this to me? You just made a run sheet of all my crap players.
Oh, mate, I've sadly got him too. 486,000, so he's in that exact same price bracket as the last two guys we've talked about. Unlike the last two, we've got more confidence in JPK. Oh. Hopefully he turns things around. Do you think for the guys who don't have him, you'd consider him, or is there too much competition with Hannes this year?
I have absolutely no idea. Listeners will remember a couple of months ago, I was so excited. I brought JPK in. First three games, 120 plus. I thought everything was rosy. And I don't think he's scored over 90 since then. There was a couple of easy games. I thought maybe he only plays the hard games, but then they played a hard game and he still didn't score. There's always been competition for points in the Sydney midfield. Maybe Mitchell's squeezing him out could be possible because those things are closely lined up. McVay seems to be playing a bit more midfield time. So I think in the preseason, I was a bit worried about JPK's ceiling just because of the competition in the midfield. But in the past, when his scoring's been lower, it's been because of a hidden injury. So maybe there's something like that going on. I really don't know.
Like you, Mark, I can't quite put my finger on it, except to say that I think of the Sydney midfielders at the moment, he's rated fourth behind Hanabry, Mitchell and McVay on average, and only barely shading Harker and Jack. So very, very nervous times moving forward. Would you recommend anyone bring him in?
Don't think I could, based on current form. It probably presents value, but I think Sloan's ahead of him because Sloan has more legitimate reasons for his slump in form. But it's crazy to think that at the moment, JPK, Sloan, Rockcliffe and Job Watson are all under 500,000.
Can't quite put our finger on it, but seems overall the community is doing well, so we'll take that. For the last question in the midfield this week from Alex Bicknell, should we hold out on our final midfield upgrade for the return of Supercoach God Gary Ablett? We've had a few questions about that, but they're coming off their bye now, so is there talk that he's going to play this week?
The talk that he's heated up his training over the last few weeks, and I think he has to get through the main session on Wednesday just to guarantee his spot for this week, but it does seem pretty likely at this stage that he'll play. I have heard people actually talking about bringing him in this week at 730,000, which with a break-even of 230 does seem pretty crazy, and especially seeing as he's unsighted, we don't know, it might take him a little while to ease into the season. Gary has shown that before when he's come back from injury, that it takes him a few games to get going, so I'm a little bit wavering. Like, I probably do have a spot and a way of getting money in my midfield to potentially bring him in, because if he did do an Ablett and average 130, he could be very important. But I think realistically, I'll probably just be waiting for an injury of some sort before I would bring him in. So there's probably a really good chance one of my eight premium midfielders will get injured at some stage, and I'm going to have to bring someone in, and hopefully that'll be the right timing to bring Ablett in. I think you'll probably need to look at him at least 2 or 3 weeks before doing it, and that's taking you pretty late in the year to be doing upgrades, and you might just be better off getting the upgrade in now, and you'll end up with more points in your team.
I agree with you there, Mark. I'm probably looking at Cripps and Wallace. They're probably placeholders for Ablett. If you needed to upgrade this week, or if you can upgrade this week from a player like Ellis Yolman or somebody like that, I'd probably pull the trigger. Unless you're sitting on, I think you've got a Johnson, Mark. I've got Wallace. You've got Wallace too. If you're sitting on somebody who's probably a bit more high scoring, then you could potentially hold out in terms of not trading those guys out yet, but probably wouldn't hold on to any rookies. And I'd, like you said, get points on field this week. So into the rucks, Mark, and we talked about Gawn last week, but we've got plenty more questions about him after he dominated 144 and made us look like fools, Mark. But job security has always been a bit of the question mark with him. So Stephen Benz asks, is Gawn this year's Stefan Martin? Again, we've got that question. Or are we just reading too far into it? Exact same question, mate.
Some of the listeners might know that I'm a teacher and rocked into school on Monday morning, and first thing I did was cop abuse for telling one of my students not to take Gawn on the weekend. And he was awesome against Geelong. Like, twice he just reached over someone and stole the ball out of their hands for a contested mark. He was fantastic. I think he's leading the competition for hitouts to advantage percentage at the moment. Kicked a couple of goals. Like, insane performance, which you're probably not going to see again from him. Bearing in mind that Geelong didn't have any rucks, which has probably improved his scoring a bit, but don't want to take anything away from him. He did look really, really good, deserved every point that he got, probably some more, and potentially provide some value at 410. You'd think, given the three games he's played, he'd be given a pretty good chance of just playing out the year as the number one ruck for Melbourne. I did notice they brought in Spencer this week, and that didn't seem to hold him back at all.
I think it was really good news that Spencer got into the team and Gawn wasn't out. So once I saw that, took it as a sign that he's a valid trade-in target, because the worry was that, you know, another Ruckman would step in and he'd have to drop out. I had Spencer in my draft team and got frustrated when he was dropped. And we've seen, I think Gawn on the weekend said he'd not played more than four games straight all up. So after the byes will be his fourth, which will match his all-time best. So from that perspective, I still think that overall he was risky for your R2. If you brought him in as a swing cover in the forward line, really well done to you. He had a terrific game. Would you consider him at 410,000 after the buys? Do you still think he's a legitimate option now that he's gone up in price?
I don't want to rule him out because, I mean, we are getting surprised by some players this year. The form of Blitzard, even people that picked him would not have had a clue he could do what he's doing. So, yeah, there have been a few surprises this year with the scoring and even some of the ultra premiums not doing as well as we thought they might. So definitely wouldn't want to rule him out at that price. I think it's good that you get some insurance with his really low break even. And we talked about this with Mitch Wallace. The problem is that you bring him in so late in the year, you're not really going to have many options to get rid of him. So you really need to be bringing him in as a keeper. So look, I'm not going to be seeking him out myself, but I can understand why someone might do it. What do you think?
Like you said, the good thing about picking a player like that is when you get the price insurance. So considering he's already gone up 70K, you're bringing him in now, as you said, as a keeper. And so from that perspective, at R2, even though he's showing good form, facing competition like Spencer and Jamar with the history that he's had seems like a proposition that's a bit too risky for mine. Like I said last week, if you can bring him in and actually hide him on your forward bench, he's a legitimate option because then you're not really risking that anymore. And so if he's still an option for people and, you know, you really like the potential of Gawn, I can definitely see trading him in after his bye. And there's no real reason to do it this week, obviously, but we've had a heap of questions about him after a particularly stellar weekend. So
on to awesome.
Yes, he was awesome. Let's not forget, though, Nick Nat got played into form with his 152 against Geelong. So it's been painful watching Rocks absolutely dominate us in those centre clearances. And Geelong lost, which was really sad, too.
I heard Dawson Simpson might have regained fitness and shouldn't be too far away.
That'd be great, mate, because we're getting smashed in the midfield. All right, to the forwards now, Mark. And we got quite a lot of questions in the forward line this week. People finishing their teams with a last forward upgrade, I noticed. So Pat Villanova's asking about a last forward option. He's named Buddy, Dow, Goddard, and Lids is another one that I want to chuck in there that Wade Hewitt's asked about as well. I noticed that a lot of people have left out the very common options that most people have gravitated toward for the first half of the season. So now we're hitting a lot of these more POD picks, Mark. I know Goddard's a fairly popular selection outside of our community, but not too many people in our community actually have Goddard. And similarly, Dow and Buddy and Lids just really haven't had the right opportune time to come into a lot of teams. So out of these relatively POD picks, who do you like?
I think that I probably like Goddard because of Essendon's draw, which is pretty good over the rest of the year. So that should see Goddard score pretty well. It will be interesting to see what role he plays when a couple of these guys come back. But I think that he's probably the most reliable for 103 average out of that group. Buddy has the most upside, but he's probably also the most likely to miss a game here or there. So he might average 110, but he might, if he misses two games, then that average comes down by 10 points, depending on your cover. So yeah, I think that's a little bit risky. I really like the Dalhouse pick. They've got three easy games left in their draw, and he's been so consistent this season, though it did fade last year, but he's been really, really consistent this year. I think all three of them are really good picks this week. They're okay priced. You're not getting a heap of value, but they're not overpriced either. Deledio is the most expensive at about 580,000. Does have a bit of a high break even, but I've been really worried about his injury because he battled with it last year. He was managing it coming into the season. He ended up missing a bunch of games after playing round one, but did play out the last sort of 10 or 11 games at the end of last year and scored really, really well. So if I had the cash, and cash just wasn't an issue, despite the injury concerns, I think I'd probably pick Deledio this week because he could average 115, whereas I don't think any of the others could.
Yep, I think I like your assessments there, apart from the fact that even though I really like his scoring potential, paying that much money with a little bit of uncertainty over his Achilles means that I don't see him as viable a pick, I guess. Yeah, 50K less. I much prefer Goddard. Like you said, Mark, I think he's probably the one that'll deliver you the most consistency. If I had to go 1, 2, 3, 4, I would have Franklin actually pretty close to the top because of his scoring potential, but only if you have good cover. If you don't have good cover, he drops probably straight down to fourth because of his likelihood of missing games. So I know a lot of people at this stage of the year are looking to actually push a premium onto the bench, maybe even a forward mid, defensive mid sort of swing player, which we'll get to in a little bit. So for those teams, I think Franklin's a good pick. If you don't have that sort of extra premium setup, one of the more consistent guys is obviously a better bet. I actually picked Dalhouse. That was because of his bye. Wary about whether or not he'll drop off. So I think I'd actually go Goddard 1, Dalhouse 2, Delidio 3. And like I said, Franklin, depending on how your bench cover is. If you had to give a 1-2-3 mark.
It's a pretty tough call there, mate. I think I'd probably have Delidio at number 1, Goddard at number 2, Buddy at 3, Dalhouse at 4. But like you said, Buddy's the one that probably could move in that scale the most. And I think you do make really good points about not getting any insurance on Delidio because he's fully priced. He could be the top scoring forward, but you're paying top dollar for him and he does have some injury concerns.
On to the next question in the forward line, and it's about another premium. I know this one will make you smile because it's a trade that finally has gone right for you, Mark. At @johar_101, Boomer Harvey started at 570K, but he's dropped down now to 484,000. He's scored 137 on the weekend. Is he more attractive than the four guys that we just talked about, potentially? I remember when I was tossing up between Harvey and Jack Zeeble that you told me to go with Harvey, and I think he's outscored Zeeble by 60 points in 2 weeks, so you must be loving that. I'm hating Jack Zeeble in comparison, Mark.
Yeah, I also had the same discussion with my mate Nate that's ranked 22nd at the moment, and he has expressed the same feelings to me as well as you, mate.
He's got Jack, does he?
He chose Zeeble as well, mate. Look, I think that Boomer, because he has not had his bye yet, and he's not that much cheaper than those other guys because of his score on the weekend. He didn't lose as much value as maybe he could have. So if he was about 450, I think he maybe would go ahead. But at 480,000, he's pretty close to the other guys. And I wouldn't necessarily have him ahead of those guys. I think he's probably on about that level.
Agree with you, Mark. I think the buy is a good point that you bring up. And there's no real point to bringing him in until after this week, in which case you're forfeiting a premium score in comparison to all the other guys that we talked about as well. So that is something to consider. Yeah, I like him much better than Zeeble, but in comparison to some of the top line guys that we talked about, I think you're spot on. And the last question here, again, will make you happy and me sad. At @BenTabTabTab has asked, do the Mitchell non-believers have to jump on now? Is he a must-have? So even though I'm really happy with Franklin, I got to say, I've got to eat my own words a little bit because he is averaging pretty darn well since you've brought him in. Two scores above 128 so far. He has had three scores under 100, so there's a little bit of hope for the people without him. But is he a must-have, Mark? Is he still a must-have?
You could probably hear me smiling, listeners, at that question. That is potentially my favorite question for the entire year so far. Is he a must-have? Gee, I haven't even thought about it because I've already got him. Look, I think that with 110 average, I think that he's very, very close to a must-have. There's not many forwards out there averaging 110. That's pretty hard to get to. And at 520,000, that actually presents a whole bunch of value if he could continue to average 110. So, yeah, I think that he's close to a must-have. I'm not sure that there's any such thing as a must-have except maybe Fife because he's your captain and there's not a whole lot of other players, maybe Goldstein, that I'd have listed as must-haves. So.
He's 520,000, and I think there's a little bit of concern that he might have the same sort of issues that Parker, Jack, and all those sorts of Sydney midfielders do have. So I think I agree with you, Mark. The must-have status was warranted when he was at 400K, and I think he's proven that to be true for you guys. Having said that, since I brought in Buddy, he hasn't been too bad either. He's averaged 127 from the last three. But definitely have to say that I'd prefer to have both of them, Mark, than to have only one of them.
It's funny to think back when we were having the discussion that his job security was going to be an issue. I think he's proved way beyond doubt that that's not going to be an issue anymore.
I'd have him probably ahead of Delidio, but in my mind, probably still behind Dalhouse, Goddard, and again, depending on how you go with your coverage, Franklin as well. Certainly still a good option for anyone still considering a last forward upgrade. I think the good thing that we found out is you can't go too wrong in the forward line. It seems to be all roses there. It's where the midfield were kicking ourselves. Who would thunk that, hey?
And defense. Alex Rand. Bring him in. Gets to the last 5 minutes.
Oh, no.
Just gets a free kick against him. That's not good. Throws the ball as hard as he can at the umpire. that's probably not very bright, mate. Gives away a 50, loses a bunch of points, comes to scaling, gets scaled down 14 points, scores 44. Bloody may as well take in a donut.
I gotta say, Mark, I'm pretty excited. I'm gonna make something like 40k trading Oxley down to Rance in a couple of weeks. So, sorry, mate.
I hope Oxley falls in a hole on the weekend, mate.
All right, and with that, we'll move to coverage questions. So for players that fall into a hole for the last half of the season, is it valuable to have coverage, Mark? Are you looking to have a strong M9 or a strong defensive midfield cover, forward mid cover, ruck forward cover? Are you planning on any sort of premium coverage, or are you going to stick with rookies? How do you approach this moving forward?
My thoughts on it are actually evolving from week to week, depending on who's performing and what the options are going forward. Original plan was to keep Cripps on my midfield bench, but then he's performed probably above expectations. DVJ's not getting it done for me. I'm not going to be able to upgrade as easy as I'd like, so maybe Cripps comes onto the field at least for a while. I mean, he looked bloody fantastic on the weekend. So, yeah, look, my thoughts are evolving. I'm looking to bring in one player that can maybe cover forward, maybe rucks. I'm looking to bring in someone that's going to be pretty decent there.
Thoughts are pretty similar to yours, Mark, and it's really team dependent, I suppose, but in general, I do like to find a cheap downgrade option to trade to provide coverage if trades allowed. So even though I'm happy with Oxley, if Rance becomes an option, I would think about side swapping there. And I know there are different ways that people can use their trades, and you don't want to push it too far. You always want to have trades for injuries. But overall, I do like that strategy, specifically if you can get, you know, the defensive midfield swing cover or forward mid swing cover. It's nice when you get a premium that can cover two lines. So Sean Burgoyne, for example, is 415k this week, and Bontempelli is 417k this week. Yeah, overall, it also depends on how much value you've taken over the course of the season. A lot of people who've put points on field early on tend to struggle with creating a little bit more value in the mid to long term. And so your options are a bit more limited. So there's no point pushing your bench too far and having lots of non-playing players just so that you can trade in premiums on your bench. But if you can keep, you know, a reasonable bench because you've held good value while doing those premium swaps, I don't mind that as an option.
Yep, agree with that, mate.
All right, and with that, mate, that wraps up the Round 12 show, the last bye episode from the two of us.
And then next week we come back and we don't have any trades left.
That'll be fun. So I guess we'll get to more conceptual topics as the season moves on. But good work to the community anyway over the past few rounds. You guys have done brilliantly. And like we said, fingers crossed that round 13 is the best round for all of us. I'm certainly hoping it's the best round for myself, Mark.
Yeah, sounds like it, mate. How many you got? 30 premiums playing this week?
Fingers crossed, mate. Fingers crossed. And with that, good luck for the upcoming round. We'll catch you again next week. See ya.
See ya.